Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. Host Green Diva Meg and co-host Green Diva Mizar share resources and ideas as they explore fun and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. And now, your host, Green Diva Meg.
Welcome, everybody. I love how they stop so suddenly.
I know. Too bad, right?
They're very coordinated.
Yeah, right on cue.
So welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
I'm Green Diva Gina. Hello, everybody.
Green Diva.
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 Yes.
And yeah, it's just us two in the studio today with Silent Rob.
I know. We're missing Green Diva Mizar, but we'll hear from her later.
He's waving.
Yes, and Rob's waving.
Yeah. So, Rob, are the levels okay over there? Because it looks kind of quiet over here. It's kind of weird. Okay.
You've got the thumbs up.
Thumbs up, baby.
Yep, we're good.
So, you know, it's just us two, but we've really been busy all week.
I know.
Doing a couple of pre-recorded interviews.
Yes.
And all kinds of fun things. And Mizar is going to call in from Toronto today.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes, she's in a satellite location this week. I'm sure it's really pretty up there this time of year.
I should think it would be right about now. They're probably getting their color.
Yeah.
Is it earlier north, right?
Well,
I get confused.
In New Hampshire, we have our full color. My mom sends me pictures all the time. So if New Hampshire has it, Toronto is, I believe, from where I am, like maybe 6 hours.
Right. So it's like
from me. So because Montreal is 3 hours from me. And from Toronto, it's like 3 or 4. So 7 hours. So they're probably almost done.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
They hardly have any color here yet. I don't know where everybody else is, but we're not getting I see leaves down, but not a lot of color.
Well, in upstate New York, I was hiking in New Paltz last weekend, and they had almost full color. All of the red maples were out.
Nice.
So, you know, they're definitely starting for sure.
Good, good, good. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to mention our sponsor, buygreen.com.
Oh, yes. We cannot forget buygreen.com.
You know, and they're having all kinds of great sales right now.
Oh,
and of course, with all the fall fun stuff, I didn't look at anything particular. I just thought I would mention that there's a lot of stuff on sale.
Oh, yeah.
And I also want to mention that I think we're going to have a buygreen.com affiliate program. We used to have one, and then I dropped it. Accidentally, actually.
Oh.
But they have a new affiliate program, and I love that because we can really promote buygreen.com.
Yes.
The great products that they have through the Green Divas.
Absolutely. They do have some awesome products, and they always have something on sale, you know? I remember when I was looking a while back for Father's Day ideas, and they have so many cool, very funky, unique things. So for any occasion, you can really find ton of stuff.
And
so,
I like their rating system, which we've mentioned before, and we're also going to be doing some gift guide reviews when we do our gift guide from buygreen.com.
I know. That's coming up if you think about it.
I know.
It's really not that far away.
I know. So let me also mention that the Green Divas Radio Show is now on Stitcher, which is a great app for listening to talk radio on demand, as well as Swell Radio app.
Yes.
Which is a new one, and they call themselves the Pandora of talk radio.
Right.
So we're very excited to be on both of those. We're still on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some other things cooking in the background, which hopefully we'll be able to talk about pretty soon.
Yes. There's always, we're always thinking over here.
No. We are working it. Working it, girl. So stay tuned for all that good news. Now, I'm in between cars. As you know, I've been driving a lot of cars lately, right? And I'm in between two total EV cars, all electric cars, no gas engines.
All right. Which ones?
The last one I had was the Chevy Spark EV.
Yes.
Which actually was a surprisingly great little car.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not big on those tiny cars, those little weenie cars.
Yeah.
But this was actually a pretty groovy little weenie car.
Okay.
And
what about it made it groovy?
Well, one of the things, first of all, just not going to the gas station is very groovy.
Truth.
But I want to tell you that because I had learned, I did that Toyota MPGE competition.
Right.
I really learned how to drive conservatively and, save mileage. I mean, it retrains you to drive.
It does.
You know, there's no jackrabbiting off of a stop, and you learn that regenerative, I'm not saying
regenerative,
it right.
Regenerative?
Yep. Right. Something like that. You regenerate when you break properly.
Okay.
Like that.
Okay. Gotcha.
So, and you can regenerate as you drive, which is kind of exciting. You learn if you... So, anyway.
Right.
I plugged this car in overnight, got myself an 85-mile range. Then I drove 22 miles this one day, came home, and still had 80 miles left on the battery.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hello.
From smart driving.
So, smart driving. And I never plugged it in again, except for the night. And I would have gone 7 days without plugging in, except I wanted to make sure these guys who picked up the car had enough range, because they need like 50 miles to get home.
Yeah.
With the car. So I'm very impressed. I only had to plug it in one night.
Awesome.
Now, granted, I'm a good candidate for an all EV because I work from home,
right.
Studio's here in my home,
right.
And I go maybe 25 miles in a day running around when mm-hmm. I'm out doing my stuff.
Right, errands, this yeah. or that, of course.
So, I mean, that's an average day. So I'm a good candidate. My husband has a hybrid, mm-hmm. so we do have another car right. that has gasoline for trips and whatever.
Right, right.
Anyway, so next week I'll be driving the Nissan Leaf finally.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I write so many stories at my job about the Nissan Leaf.
Do you?
Yes.
Wow.
Good things.
Good things.
Good things.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm pretty excited. But so I'm in this EV frame of mind. I'm in an EV mode, man.
Awesome.
And then, of course, this morning I wake up and NPR is talking about the
Tesla.
Combustible Tesla there.
I know.
And it's all about this battery, this lithium-ion battery,
and
right?
And it just, yeah, I guess what had happened is it collided with some sort, had some kind of a collision with
it did.
Garbage. It had nothing to do with...
Well, there was a metal thing that it...
In the road or something. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I must have just hit it just right. I know that, you know, I'm a finance writer besides
right,
this
job. Right.
And shares have dropped dramatically because Tesla, we were reporting on them every day since the stock was either rising or getting, you know, upgraded by different companies. And today it just completely
plummeted.
They called it, they said it burned, and it did.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, I was listening to some very competent, nice man on NPR talking about it, but I said, but that's not my John Volker, you know. My favorite green car dude. Who? Why weren't they talking to him? Because he's the man.
He's the man
from Green Car Reports.
He's the most eloquent speaker.
Well, he's just so articulate,
yes.
and knowledgeable, and really and, good at answering simple.
Yes.
You know, like what in my mind is very complicated. He simplifies it very well.
He's super accessible, yeah. which makes him a great interview.
So anyway, I thought, wow, the Green Divas are rarely timely, like on hot news, literally. Get it?
Hot. Ha ha ha.
So,
yeah, you're on fire.
I know. So, anyway, I reached out to John, who's been very good and accessible and kind to us, and said, are you available for a quick call-in? But
yeah.
he was not, because he's really literally in an airport right now, and
okay.
we didn't have time to do a...
Ah, shucks.
But he wrote an article, so I just want to refer to the article on Green Car Reports, where he really, you know, explains what's going on. Listen, these batteries don't just spontaneously combust.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing that he wrote about, which was a statement from Tesla, but what people don't understand is Tesla designed the car so that if there is some kind of accident that causes the battery to inflame,
yeah,
the cabin of the car is protected.
And it was. If you
and
look on the video,
yeah. mm-hmm.
it definitely was, because the flames were completely contained only in the front part
right.
of the car.
And they both
seats completely.
Right.
You know.
So the gentleman, they have a warning system. He was warned, told to pull over by the car.
Yes.
You know, and he did. He did what he was told. He got out of the car. He's safe. And the car was like not entirely
mm-hmm.
burnt to a crisp, but contained
yeah.
to the area. In.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know if it's
total. Do you
think
he got a free Tesla after that?
You know, I hope he does.
I was thinking about that. I'm like, I hope they were like, I'm really sorry. Here's another one.
Sorry your car burnt to a crisp.
Here's a brand new Model S.
But anyway, I think there's a lot of I think, ignorance. You know, people just don't understand.
Yeah.
And there were, I think this happened in a vault last year in a similar situation.
Yep, actually it did. You're right.
And of course, the Boeing, I think it's a Boeing that's flying a...
The 787, it's the Dreamliners.
Yeah.
They're having battery issues and different airlines are constantly reporting. This is so funny.
So I think there's a lot of battery fear.
Yeah,
there is. And that's why I like folks like John Volker, because he did this article which really... explains exactly what's going on,
right.
That this is not like they're going to just spontaneously combust.
No, there
people.
Was a reaction.
And there's not, actually, it's probably safer than a gasoline tank fire.
Yes.
Right? If you're going to talk about fuel fire versus fuel fire.
Having one completely explode, right. As to one warning, right. You to pull over so you could get out,
well,
before it explodes.
And it's more contained and manageable. Although, I will say that reading about how the firemen, the water will not put out a lithium ion battery fire.
So what do they do?
They have to use a chemical. I don't know exactly what the chemical is, but dry chemical extinguisher.
Yeah, you'd have to use something.
So, but they're equipped. They're mm-hmm. equipped. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that because. So
John Volker.
Go to Green Car Reports, and you know we'll put a link to it on thegreendivas.com.
Yes,
shameless plug moment.
Yes.
I also want to mention real quick that our Green Diva Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah Hoff, who is really, she's our prosperity diva.
Yes,
she's
she is.
Coming on board to, you know, help do some sales, which is, you know, the mundane term, but we like prosperity better.
Yeah, it's cuter.
And she's marketing. She's really, really bright and really energized and excited. And she has a connection to Omega Institute.
Yes.
So she is going to, this weekend, hang out with Bill Clinton, Deepak Chopra.
Oh, my gosh. She's so
Paul
cool.
Paul Hawkins.
Sarah is the coolest.
She is the coolest.
Yeah.
But she's going, they're doing a conference up there called Where Do We Go From Here?
Okay.
Which I was invited to go, but am unable to go.
But we're sending our prosperity diva.
So we'll be tweeting about that a bit.
Okay.
The hashtag is #OCSL2013 if you want to check it out.
Okay.
And you can go to eomega.org to find out information about this weekend. And they are doing mostly live streaming of all of the talks.
Oh, good.
And the lineup is incredible.
Are they doing webcasts?
Majora Carter. Yes, webcasts.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Webcasts. So I'm encouraging everybody to check it out.
Yeah.
Now, coming up today, we have our special Green Dude segment with this young man that you found.
Yeah.
Devin Bennion, mm-hmm. who is still in college at Brigham Young University, but he's invented a way to biodegrade plastic in up to 3 years, they think, rather than...
A thousand.
Which is a big deal. I mean, seriously.
It really is.
If these guys pull this off, it is going to make a big difference in getting rid of plastic in our world, which would be good. So we'll talk to him. Or we pre-recorded an interview with him.
Yes,
so
we talked to him Tuesday,
you'll hear
that.
Yes. Then you have a foodie file report on five of your favorite fall foods.
Yes, I know.
How about that alliteration, right?
I know, right?
Is it good?
I know we talked about apples last week, and I was going to include them on this list this week, but there's so many really interesting foods that people don't normally cook
with,
you know? And yeah. I think it's good to...
I like that you use persimmons.
Yeah. No one ever thinks to cook with them, but I found a few really great recipes in an old cookbook the other day for, like, different glazes or salads.
Yum.
And, you know, I think that there's a lot of foods that people just aren't exposed to that they need to be.
So that'll be a good segment.
Yes.
Then we have Green Diva Mizar calling in. I don't know if it's exactly a DIY segment, but...
It's a Green Diva Mizar segment.
It's a Green Diva Mizar on the road, DIY, roaming DIY segment.
Yes.
From Toronto. And then our featured guest, I got an opportunity to talk to one of my food heroes, Marion Nessel.
Yep.
And she is an author. She has an incredible title. Author and Paulette Goddard Professor, Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and Professor of Sociology at New York University. She is also right now the nominee for the James Baird Foundation Leadership Award, which she really deserves. And so I had the opportunity to meet her once, but it was great to talk to her this week, and you will get to hear that interview
Perfect.
Also.
She sounds like a rock star. That title is amazing.
Well, She really is, and she's such a lovely woman. And well, for us foodies, it's great to have someone doing and participating in research and the academic side of all the things that we know. And then she says, "Well, and here's the research to prove it, man."
Right.
So, I'm gonna say let's take a quickie break.
Okay. Let's
and
do it.
When we come back, I think what are we doing first? Green Dude Report. Okay.
We have Devin.
Devin. So just stay tuned, people.
I want Green Diva nails without all the nasty toxic chemicals.
I've got the solution. I just tried this G2 Organics non-toxic odor-free nail polish and remover. Did I mention odor-free? Look at my gorgeous toes. And you should see the colors. The colors are great. And the best part? Each one comes with its cool little touch-up tube.
And I guess since it doesn't smell, you can whip it out anywhere. The touch-up tube, I mean. Find out more at G2Organics.com.
What's with the slingshot? I haven't seen a slingshot since I was about 10.
Oh, I've been launching seed bombs in the ugly gray spots in my neighborhood. Can't wait to see what sprouts.
Come again?
A creative company called Greenade makes these clay balls that are regionally, you know, specific seeds and offers them by internet and even vending machines around the country.
That is so cool. Can I borrow this? I want to shoot some bombs in my neighborhood.
Find out more about seed bombs at greenade.co.
Greetings, everyone. This is David Avocado Wolf, nutritionist, author, and chocolatier. And you're listening to The Green Divas. Listen close, tune in, and have the best day ever.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
So we have a guest green dude today named Devin Bennion.
Yes.
That Gina found.
Yes.
I think this was one of Gina's finds. He sounds like a really interesting young man. He's the co-founder of a company called Environment, I-N-Environment, and it's devoted to environmental technologies that, you know, what we were interested in and what we learned about is that it's biodegrading plastic. So we're pretty excited to talk to Devin about environment and what they're doing. Hi, Devin.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling in today. I know you have a busy class schedule. You're still in school. Where are you going to school?
I'm actually going to Brigham Young University. I'm a sophomore here.
Wow. So you're even in a different time zone, right? Where's Brigham Young?
Yes, I am. Mountain West time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're in Idaho then, yeah?
I'm actually in Utah.
Oh, you're in Utah. Okay.
Well, you know, from us in New Jersey, it's all the same out there.
I had a friend that went to school up the university in Idaho.
So
I had to ask. Yes.
So now tell us just quickly what Environment, your company, is.
Yeah, so Environment is a company that that we've kind of created while we've been students here. And when I say we, I mean me and some of my roommates. And we're devoted to creating green technologies that are smart and effective. We've seen so many you know, green topics come up, and right now clean energy is a big one that we kind of wanted to be a part of it, and so we started this company.
Cool. Now, is this what you're studying in school?
No, I'm studying finance. So I'm in the other department.
So what sparked this then? If you're in finance, what was the motivating factor that got you into looking into things that were environmentally friendly or becoming more environmentally conscious?
Yeah, I think it all started with actually the oil spill. And when we heard about kind of what was happening in the Gulf, we heard about a bacteria that was actually helping to kind of take away all this oil that was found in the ocean. And when we thought about that, we thought, well, maybe we can find another bacteria that will kind of help degrade plastics.
Wow.
And when we started looking around, and eventually we came to the conclusion that bacteria wasn't the way to go, but it definitely sparked this idea of finding you know, the right chemical solution that would degrade plastics. And we've kind of run with that idea ever since.
Well, and just to let people know, if they don't know, then they're living under a rock. Plastic is one of the scourges of our environment because it doesn't biodegrade, and this is a big problem that you guys are coming up with a solution for.
Exactly. We've actually done some research on this, and it takes plastics And to be honest, we don't know because we haven't been alive long enough to see it degrade. But we believe it takes it about 1,000 years to degrade.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's even less time when it's in an environment such as a landfill, when it's buried and there's no oxygen to react with. So it takes a long time.
Yeah.
So how did you find the chemical that breaks down plastics? I'm not going to reveal your secret, but how was that process? Like, how did that process come about?
Yeah, so we actually contacted, there's a program called Get Mentoring, and we contacted someone off of that program, and he had a science friend named Stephen Boyd, who later ended up becoming our partner. And we ended up talking to him about a possible bacteria that would degrade plastics, and he kind of steered us away from that, and he mentioned that he had an idea of a chemical, a chemical solution that would actually be able to quicken the pace of the degradation process. And so he was actually the one, Dr. Stephen Boyd, working at Off-Ball Labs, that kind of found out this chemical that we're going to be using.
Now, in a chemical, sometimes in the environmental field, when you say chemical, people go, oh, no, you know. Mm-hmm. Are there any side effects or, you know, consequences from using this chemical or making this chemical?
This is one of the big questions that we always get. And we're actually we're running tests right now. We're making sure that it will be eco-friendly.
Good.
We want to help the problem. We don't want to hurt the problem. So with that, we're kind of we're doing some tests. We actually just finished our initial prototype of this chemical solution, and we're doing further tests to make sure that it is eco-friendly. So that just know that is definitely our top concern.
Now, where do you see this going? What's the future of this Plastec chemical that you are in the process of developing?
Yeah, it looks like a bright future. I've definitely been the one in charge of customer validation, kind of getting the feedback of landfill managers who were looking to market this to. And they're all very intrigued. They're very interested, and they all want more information faster than we can get it, to be honest. And so it looks like it's a very bright future. It looks like this is really a product that there'll be a need for. So once we finish the testing, then we're actually going to start doing a full-on landfill test. And then from there, we'll start servicing landfills.
Wow. So is your product going to be, obviously, it's going to be able to biodegrade plastic in a measurable amount of time so you can see and validate the process pretty quickly?
Yeah. So we're looking to actually take the degradation rate to about 1 to 3 years, depending on the
wow.
type of plastic, of course. With some of the lighter plastics, we're looking more of 12 months, and then kind of the heavier duty plastics, we're looking at about 36 months.
One more question. Is there anybody else doing anything like this?
Not that we've been able to find, which is it's another exciting thing, knowing that we have such a disruptive technology in today's world, but we haven't been able to find anyone that's doing the same thing that we're doing. And we hope that it works, and we hope that we can really help out the environment.
Well, I'm thrilled that you've stumbled upon this in whatever way you have and that you're pursuing it with your partners.
Yeah, I mean, this really caught my eye, being someone who I didn't study environmental science at school, but I was very involved with the environmental organizations on my campus here in New Jersey. And so this really caught my eye.
It's from my perspective, it's going to be Gina, like people like Gina and Devin that are going to make the changes. You're the young minds, the young innovators.
Minds. Yes, yes.
Thank you so much for calling us and being our guest Green Dude today. And we hope to talk to you soon as things evolve.
Well, thank you so much.
And how can people find out more?
Yeah, they can go to our website, which is www.environment. And environment's spelled a little different. It's spelled with an I. And then there's no silent N before the M. So it's
okay.
Environment.
Got it.
LLC.com. They can definitely find more information there. And we're also running an Indiegogo campaign where they can find, again, lots of information. So if they just go to Indiegogo.com and then they search Plastec, which is spelled Plastec, then our page will come up and they can get all the information that they're looking for there as well.
Well, I wish you great success and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Devin.
Bye-bye.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
I love the intro.
I know. We still
Every
love that
week.
Intro.
Great.
So now we're talking awesome food. Wait, what did I say? How did I put
my alliteration? You had a great alliteration here.
Five favorite fall foods. But yes. I think it's different. I think I've
We have
it
five fantastic fall foods.
Fantastic.
So we could add other stuff.
Anyway, so that's on a website because you did a nice post. I will just remind everybody, go to thegreendivas.com.
Yeah, check it out. But yeah, I mean, fall is a great time. I mean, it's great to cook all year round, but fall is very special because it's harvest time. And I was thinking a lot about different foods that a lot of people don't think to cook with, you know?
Right,
and there's a lot of really plentiful options with really unique tastes this time of year.
Like a lot of people cut up pumpkins and put them on their doorstep, but they don't necessarily cook with it.
Exactly.
I mean, there's pumpkin pie, but come on.
Yeah, but they're going to the store and getting pureed pumpkin, usually. They're not usually roasting their own and making their own puree.
Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun, right?
It is really fun. It is really fun. I recommend doing it.
And it's yummy.
So good. Totally worth it. And yeah, so pumpkins are actually my first food that I talk about. But they did originate here in North America, so it makes them basically our own. And the furthest back I could trace it was that the Native Americans used to dry it and then weave it into rugs for their homes.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Isn't that kind of cool?
That's very... Well, there's all that pulp.
That's why. Right? It's very tough.
So you got to use it, man.
Yeah.
So very sustainable.
They made rugs out of it, and then they also would dry strips and cure it a certain way so it could be eaten as well throughout the winter.
Got it.
Which is really smart because, as you know, like, even around here, but especially up north, too, the winters are really harsh, so it's good to, you know, they made their own basically pumpkin jerky, if you think about it.
Well,
you know,
and so, I mean, you talk about, let's just touch on each one because
sure.
we won't have enough time to go through all of them.
Oh, no, of course.
And then there's, I like persimmon. You put persimmon in there because that is something I don't often cook with or think about.
I know. And the thing is that I thought was important was posting some recipes, too. So
yes.
I found this blog called The Kitchen, and they basically have a really great blog post. It's 10 warming recipes, so it's for fall, specifically geared for fall. So you can just check that out too. And they're from China originally. They're
persimmons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they're grown there, but California, they grow them
a lot
too, because you know it's California.
California grows everything.
Yeah, they do. And then we talk about beets, and you have an awesome beet post
too. I have a fun for the love of beets.
Yes, so. You know, check out Meg's blog post as well that she embedded. But, you know, my mom's favorite are beets. She loves beets, and they're so good for you. There's so many interesting health benefits for them.
Yeah,
and they're
pretty
really
colors.
Oh, they are.
Pretty colors.
They make your food look beautiful.
So I have a couple of actual of my favorite beet recipes that are in that link that I put in there. So check that out.
Oh, yeah, check it out.
Well, I think one of them is my borscht.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Which is, you know, everybody loves my borscht.
Yeah.
Well, I like it. Anyway, and then there was a couple of other things. I don't remember what they are now, but the recipes are all there.
Yes.
And you talk about pomegranate.
Yes. Okay.
I didn't think of that as a fall food.
It is, though.
I didn't know
it
that.
It is. So pomegranate, my two favorite fruits ever.
Oh, that must mean Rob's trying to get in the room.
Oh,
hold
that's Gracie.
Minute.
Yeah. Gracie's in a mood today. But yeah, so with pomegranates, in Greece, pomegranates are very special. You actually make them in a special kind of grain salad during a funeral. It's to kind of promote like health and prosperity. But I love them in general. They're so good for you. They're full of antioxidants. They're a complete superfood. And they're really great if you're trying to ward off colds. So I always eat them whenever I feel like I'm about to get really sick. So eating pomegranate juice or the seeds is really, really good for you. But their growing season extends, usually from September until about January. And most people think that pomegranates are grown in summer, but they are, in fact, a fall food. Not necessarily around here, but, I mean, go to Whole Foods and you'll see pomegranates everywhere this time of year. So check it out.
And Brussels sprouts, of course.
Brussels sprouts. Have you ever seen Brussels sprouts grown?
I was thinking, yes.
They look prehistoric.
On this huge stalk.
I know. And they look like they're about to attack you.
I think of them as little baby cabbages.
I know. Yeah. Well, my favorite way to have them is just roasted. Roasted.
Oh, nothing better than a roasted.
You know, or steamed. That's how I like my Brussels sprouts.
Although
but
we came upon it and I made up my own recipe of shaving them.
Okay.
And then you sort of saute them because they cook a little quicker.
Sure.
And with olive oil, garlic, you know, a little lemon, salt, pepper.
Right. Yeah. Hello. Perfect. Yum. But yeah, we posted... Cooking Light has a really great post about different recipes, too. So check that out if you're in the mood for Brussels sprouts and you're not sure how to cook them. You know, totally
check
worth your while.
Check out Gina's post at thegreendivas.com.
Yes, absolutely.
I think we have Green Diva Mizar here, so stay tuned.
Absolutely.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. Reduce, recycle, reuse, and if you're feeling creative, repurpose. Repurposing is one of Green Diva Mizar's favorite DIY things to do, and it's fun.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Mizar.
You get an extra intro.
Really weird?
What's weird?
Tyler Robb answered the phone and threw me totally off.
Oh, you were expecting me, weren't you?
I was.
Oh, you got a man's voice.
I know. I thought, did I dial the wrong number?
Rob wasn't so silent anymore.
And that's what threw me off.
That's so funny. How's Toronto?
Toronto, well, you know, we're having great weather, which I understand you are too. But
yes.
Those gray clouds that are now over New Jersey are going to make their way over to Toronto tonight. But it's been beautiful. Beautiful. I didn't bring any like lightweight shirts and I'm like peeling off my clothes. It's beautiful. I mean, you know, respectfully, but
you know, you sound pretty good, you know,
you do.
Considering you know how our phone quality can get here.
Well, you know what? I think maybe if our interviewees have the wherewithal to use Skype. I'm calling you via Skype.
Wow.
Really?
Really? Yeah, I hear you loud and clear. I was prepared to barely hear you, but this is brilliant.
It's working.
You know what? Maybe when I'm being the happy booker and booking people, I can suggest Skype.
Yeah.
Right. But they have to just call. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because you, out of a lot of different people we've had, you sound really good.
Yeah.
See that?
Of course, that's just because she's Green Diva Mizar.
Yeah, she has the magic
touch.
Either
that or because when I'm... What is it? When I'm good, I'm good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Okay, Mae West.
So, yeah, exactly. Good call.
So how was your trip up? What's the exciting stuff going on up there?
I will tell you, these peepers are heading north already because, you know, coming into Syracuse it was beautiful. The leaves were stunning. And we had so much water this year that they're only better. I mean, you know, if you have a dry summer, the leaves turn brown and fall off.
Well, they suck down here right now, right? I mean, every once in a while you see something red, but the rest is just brown and on the ground. I mean, I'm not seeing any color.
They're beautiful. So
good.
The ride up
good.
Was lovely and pleasant. But the best part is that usually you go to Toronto, you go to Niagara Falls, and then you kind of make your way around the lake to the west and then head to Toronto. But we have a client that's on the other side of the lake. So we went up towards Kingston and Thousand Islands, and I just encourage everybody to go look up Google Thousand Islands.
Oh, we used to have my uncle had a place up there. We used to go fishing.
Lord.
It was incredible.
Lord, it's on the St. Lawrence River, and it's just like you see the glacier came through all those eons ago and just dropped these little islands all over the river. And even the tiniest island has a house on it. So I said to Antonio, I said, you know what? You see those two boulders? Just buy that. I'll be fine with just that.
Yeah. Oh, no. They had like this really rough little cabin, and it was all fishing and a lot of, Yeah, a lot of little tiny islands, and, you know, we had to have a boat. It was like...
Got to get a boat. Not too big a boat, but you got to... It was beautiful. So we stopped at a park there on the way, just, you know, made the ride longer that we had to go see this client. It was, of course, all worth it. So we stopped at a park, and on the way up, you know me, I'm constantly looking, constantly scavenging, constantly hunting. I have...
Well, you are a journalist.
Well, that, and also I'm a repurposer.
Yes, you are.
I have lovely wild purple asters in my yard right now, which I actually brought down from the Berkshires when I was up there. The purple asters up here are this amazing purple color that is just, they're twice, three times, four times more vibrant than the ones down there. So, of course, we stop at this park, and what am I doing? I'm, like, ripping plants out. Okay. They're wild. I can grab a few of these. Then the other thing I picked up, and that's what I've been doing now. I've been collecting seeds by deadheading as many flowers as I can.
Well, that's a good idea, and then you can share with your Green Diva colleagues.
Exactly. And I have so many. So even though I have cone flower in my yard, I thought, well, I'll just this Toronto cone flower over here. But that's a real pain in the neck to get the seeds off because they hurt.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Yeah. So I have some purple cone flower, which is the echinacea, but it's the pink one.
Yep.
And then I have cosmos, which is down in Jersey as well. But they're not perennials, but they do reseed themselves.
Yeah, they do volunteer.
I have a mystery plant, and I don't know what it is, but it's a very pretty flower. I have to look it up.
I think that's great. It's like a DIY, you know.
What, Meg?
DIY seed collection, man.
Yeah. Repurposing plants?
I figured if Thomas Jefferson could do it when he went to France all those years ago and still produce plants from those seeds that he brought over then.
Yeah.
I mean, I do it all the time.
Yeah.
But I have one important thing to say.
Okay.
Tell us.
I also picked up milkweed pods.
Huh.
You know what we used to call wishers when we were little kids?
Yeah.
I have a ton. And some people would consider them weeds. And even wild asters. But I always say a weed is just a flower you don't like. So I picked up, because on my way up here, and I really think we need to do this as the Green Divas who talk about the earth and sustainability. On my way up, you know, I'm an NPR junkie.
Yes.
Yep. So we listen to NPR.
We are too.
There's a real milkweed. Let me just put that out there. Milkweed is a stopping point for monarch butterflies.
Uh-huh.
They feed on that nectar like there's no tomorrow, and it strengthens.
Oh, is it like ice cream? I said, is it like ice cream to monarch butterflies?
Yes. Don't talk to me about ice cream because I'm dying. It's really great. Anyway, and up here they have such great gelato because they have so many Italian neighborhoods. Anyway, so I picked up milkweed pods so that I can plant them in my garden. To not necessarily attract monarchs, because their migration paths are pretty set. However, I have not seen a single one in New Jersey. And what I heard on the radio interview is that they're actually tagging them and counting them because right now, environmentally, they're being impacted.
Wouldn't
that be a disgrace if we lost this beautiful creature?
Well, I have noticed. I have a lot of bee and butterfly friendly plants.
Yeah,
and I have not seen, you know, as many as I. Yeah, no.
No, the big orange one. I have butterfly bushes, and I get a lot of tiger swallowtails, the big yellow and black ones.
Right,
but none of those stunning monarchs.
Yeah.
So I think that we should, I would like to see if we can't book an interview so that we can better educate our audience about this. But I did pick up milkweed, but I will say one thing. I have a confession.
What's your confession?
I did pop open one of the pods and let all the wishers go, and I felt like a 10-year-old. Yay! I felt like a kid.
It's allowed. It's allowed. Like, it has to be done.
Well,
yes. Well, it was like not Johnny Appleseed. It was... These are milkweed seeds.
That's funny. Well, I hope you all your wishes come true, my dear, and you have a safe trip, and we'll have you back in the studio next week, right?
You betcha. Well, Mariel Hemingway, I'm not going to miss that.
Of course.
Of course, I'll be back in the saddle again as soon as I get back early next week.
Okay. Have a good trip, Mizar.
Bye, Mizar.
Great. Wait, hold on. Hold on. I got to do it. Ready? Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
For step-by-step instructions on this DIY project and to find out more about the Green Divas radio show and podcasts, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Okay. All right, then. We are ready to hear my discussion with Marion Nethel.
Yes. I'm so interested to hear what she has to say.
All right, people. This was actually really fun, so I'm hoping you'll stay tuned and listen to my discussion with Marion Nethel earlier this week, and we'll be right back.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people, who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Well, I'm really excited. We're going to speak to, because Mizar didn't make it here, to Marion Nethel, who's the Paulette Goddard Professor, Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and Professor of Sociology at New York University. Hi, Marion.
Hi.
I'm so glad you could call. And wow, that's such a mouthful. You've done so much, and I had mentioned to you before that we had met briefly, and I didn't expect you to remember, but I remembered you at one of the Natural Gourmet Institute Friday night dinners with Anne-Marie Colbin.
I mean, she stepped down as head of the school, and it was just wonderful to see her.
It was. So you are being honored by the James Baird Foundation Leadership. It's the James Baird Foundation Leadership Award.
I am. I'm so pleased.
Well, it's about time.
This is a new award that they've started. I guess last year was the first year. It really is a big honor.
Well, it's well deserved because you've got an incredible background in doing work for, I mean, you've done so much of the academic work and the research for us foodies. Can you talk a little bit about what you've been doing?
Well, I teach at NYU. That's my main activity. I'm a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health, and I've been here for about 25 years. And starting in the 1990s, I began working on issues related to the effect of food marketing on what people eat. And I wrote a book called Food Politics in 2002, which is now out in its third edition. And it was really, I think, the first book that systematically took a look at the role of the food industry in today's problems with obesity. And so it got a lot of attention for that. And now everybody kind of understands what I was talking about then, but at the time it was quite shocking.
Yeah, no, I remember reviewing it. I had a magazine at the time called Relevant Times, and we were like the first sustainable living magazine in New York, and we thought it was a big deal, and it was very exciting to those of us who sort of knew these things, but there wasn't, you had such a great way of articulating it and gathering research. So, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
So building on that, obviously you teach, that's part of what you teach, and you have recent books, right?
Oh, I do. The most recent one is Eat, Drink, Vote, An Illustrated Guide to Food Politics, which came out just a couple of weeks ago, and it's a cartoon book.
Ooh, I have to see that one.
Yeah, it's a book of about 275 cartoons by about 40 different political cartoonists. Who have drawn cartoons related to all of the issues that I talk about all the time. And it was just a wonderful collaboration with a cartoon bank in Seattle that represents these cartoonists. And she sent me 1,100 cartoons to pick from.
Wow.
It was really fun. It's out. It's a paper-bound book in full color. It's really pretty and a lot of fun.
And how important is that, though? Eat, drink, vote. Well, I mean, cartoons are fun and entertaining, and they get our attention, which is what really is important. But the topic of eat, drink, vote, and how politics does affect the food we eat and the way that it's grown. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Sure. I mean, these are political cartoonists, So mm-hmm. there are people who are capable of doing something that I just can't imagine doing, which is with just a few lines illustrating some current topic of food political interest, whether it's food stamps or whether it's obesity or whether it's hunger or genetically modified foods or any of the kinds of things that people are really concerned about. Cartoonists are able to do with just a few lines and a stroke of the pen and kind of not only illustrate the problem but also comment on it. I just think it's a brilliant skill, and it's something I can't even imagine doing. It takes me pages to explain what they can do in one little drawing.
Yeah, they are amazing.
It was when I got the 1,100 cartoons, I just made piles of them by topic. And pretty soon the piles made sense as chapters, and the book is organized into chapters on a variety of topics. How the food system works, how come we have hunger in the world, how come we have obesity in the world, what's the story on marketing and selling food to kids, which is just an enormous issue right now.
Yeah.
What happens in schools? What happens with food safety? What about all of the issues that everybody's concerned about, food additives and chemicals in food? And then a chapter on the food system, the food movement that's trying to change the system to one that's healthier for people and the planet.
When you mentioned, like, I'm going back to the, I kind of made a list of some of the topics that you pulled out of there, like childhood obesity. Now, that's something, obviously, the First Lady is very involved with. You started it. but have you met Michelle Obama, and have you had any interaction with her and some of the policy work that she's trying to do?
Well, up until a week or two ago, the answer to that question would be no. But a couple of weeks ago, I went to the White House convening on food marketing to children, and I was introduced to Mrs. Obama at that meeting. I can't say that we sat down and had a heart-to-heart talk, but we were introduced, and I'm told it was a photo op, and I'm waiting for the photograph.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm excited for you, and I'm glad that your work is beginning to be recognized, and it, sometimes it just takes a while for these things to, make it to places like the White House.
Well, to me, it's absolutely thrilling that someone at the level of the White House is interested in the same kind of issues that I am.
Yes.
And what's so interesting about Mrs. Obama's Let's Move campaign is that it... she has no elected authority to do anything. She doesn't have constitutional authority to put regulations in. All she has is charisma and leadership.
Well,
and she's got a lot of both.
Yeah.
So what she's trying to do is to make food companies behave better about the kind of marketing that they're doing to children. And whether she'll be able to achieve anything is, remains to be seen, but I think it's great that she's putting them on notice, and also it's bringing these kinds of issues to public attention in a way that they've never been brought to public attention before.
And you're right, it is very thrilling. I, for one, am excited that they're highlighting the gardens that they're producing. You know, they're actually producing food for some local kids, and they involve some of the local communities, the schools in these gardens, which I think is fabulous.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do.
Now, you also mentioned GMOs. How, it's just an enormous topic. I don't even know where to begin. But you obviously must have some opinions because you're obviously more educated than most about these kinds of issues.
Well, I not only have opinions, but I wrote half a book about them.
Well, there you go.
That's my book, Safe Food, The Politics of Food Safety. Half of it is about GMOs.
Okay.
And I wrote the book in 2003, so that's now 10 years ago. And although it was updated in 2010, and when I did the update for the 2010 edition, I was astounded at how little had changed.
Yeah.
The arguments that I wrote about in that book are just as fresh today and being brought out on a daily basis as they were 10 years ago. I have a big section in the book on golden rice, for example.
Right.
And all of a sudden, everybody is writing about golden rice again, as if it's the solution to the world's food problems. It wasn't in 2003, and it isn't now, for exactly the same reasons. And what's so interesting to me is how polarized the opinions are about genetically modified foods and how they do not budge.
Now, so just in case people don't know, what is golden rice? Is that a genetically modified version?
Yeah, it's a rice that's been genetically modified to contain beta-carotene, which is a precursor of vitamin A. Mm-hmm. And it's the poster child for the consumer benefits of genetically modified foods. One of the problems with GMOs is that they benefit producers. They don't benefit consumers very much.
Right.
And it's been hard to get consumers interested in them and willing to appreciate them because they don't do anything for consumers.
Right.
Except turn up in their food unlabeled, which is annoying and suspicious.
Yeah.
So golden rice was to be the poster child for the genetically modified food that really, really had an important public health purpose. Vitamin A deficiency is rampant throughout the developing world, and this will have the precursor of vitamin A in it. And it's been worked on now for 10 or 12 years. It's very, very difficult scientifically to put something like this together, and it's taken a very long time to get the patent issues straightened out, the production issues straightened out, and to do the kind of research that's needed in order to show that it works. It's still not in production.
Right, so they still haven't proved that it actually does.
And test planted.
Right.
But there, from my standpoint, there are lots. This is a product that I don't know whether it's going to change people's vitamin A intake. I don't know whether the people who need to have this are the ones who are going to get it. That's a social issue that requires a social solution to a problem. But I do know that you have to have a healthy diet in general in order to be able to process beta-carotene into vitamin A. There are lots of sources of vitamin A in the food supply of people who are vitamin A deficient, but for either cultural reasons or financial reasons, they don't buy those foods or eat those foods.
Right.
Those are also social problems that require social solutions, and this may or may not work. It depends on pricing. It depends on distribution. It depends on whether people accept the yellow color. It depends on all kinds of things.
Well, and so what do you say? The other argument I hear all the time is, but we can't feed the world. We need, GMOs to, genetically engineered food to feed the world.
Yeah, that's the classic argument. And unfortunately for that argument, there have been many, many studies that show that conventional agriculture or even organic agriculture are almost as productive, within 10% of the level of productivity. So that's an argument that doesn't fly. What genetically modified foods do is make a lot of money for the people who sell the seeds.
Yeah.
Because the seeds have to be purchased every year. They can't be regrown, and the companies that make the seeds are exercising their patent rights very forcefully and making sure that farmers are not collecting seeds to use the following year.
Well, to the point where
that's where the money is in this. And it's that distorts the situation so that there are many, many reasons why people, I think, are quite rational to be concerned about genetically modified foods. I don't happen to think that safety is a big issue.
Good.
On the basis of my research. But I can sure think of lots of reasons why you'd be concerned about it. Or the way I like to put it is, even if genetically modified foods are safe, they're not necessarily acceptable.
Well, and so, at some point, the rational argument that why wouldn't you put it on a label, especially if the companies believe they are safe, then why are they concerned about putting
it
on a label?
Well, they're afraid that nobody will buy them.
Well,
and that people will boycott foods that are labeled that they contain genetically modified foods. I think the companies brought this on themselves. If they had labeled it right from the beginning, this would be an issue that's over by now.
Yeah.
And the thing that surprises me the most is it's been 20 years since they went into production, and it's taken this long for the labeling issue to become as prominent as it is. I thought it was an enormous mistake. Well, I was on the FDA Food Advisory Committee when all of this was being discussed in 1994, and I and the other three consumer representatives on that advisory committee all said, you know, you just got to label this. You have to figure out a way to label it. It's got to be labeled. If you don't label it, the public is going to be extremely suspicious.
Well, yeah.
And
yeah.
that, of course, is exactly what happened. But they were warned about lots of things they were warned that weed resistance to the herbicide Roundup would become a very serious problem,
mm-hmm.
and it is becoming a very serious problem.
Right.
They were warned about all kinds of things. They paid no attention.
Well, that's discouraging, but the encouraging part is that, you know, people are becoming more and more educated and aware thanks to the work you're doing, the books you're writing, and the public speaking that you do. You've sat on advisory boards for the FDA. Do they ever listen to you?
I've always been a consumer representative, and at the end of my first round on the Food Advisory Committee, they sat us down and did a debriefing and explained to us that the purpose of the Advisory Committee was to give the FDA some kind of indication of what kind of reaction there would be to decisions that the FDA had already made.
Okay.
We weren't really advising them.
Okay.
We were just giving them a heads up about where they were likely to run into trouble.
To PR issues,
In PR. And, I mean, I think if we had realized that, we would have screamed much, much louder and really made a much bigger fuss about it. So, in general, I don't know. I mean, I don't think they listen to me, but I don't know who they listen to.
Well,
I can guess.
I, for one, am listening. I know our audience is listening. I'm very grateful for the work that you're doing, the work that you've done and continue to do. And I'm glad James Baird Foundation has included you in this leadership award, because it is very worthy.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you again sometime, I'm sure, because I see your name, and I know we cross paths almost in New York a lot, and you are one of my foodie heroes, and I appreciate all of the work that you do.
Well, thank you so much.
And thanks for taking time to call today, and we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
My pleasure.
Thanks. Bye-bye, Marion.
Bye-bye.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
All right.
I know that was a difficult interview because the sound on the phone, it took a lot of editing. So
mm-hmm.
I apologize for the buzz. The buzz. Anyway, we're going to go, man.
Yeah.
So I just want to mention that next week we have Mariel Hemingway and Bobby Williams.
I know. We have such a great show lined up for next week.
Mariel will be calling in live, and we have a pre-recorded interview with Bobby because
mm-hmm.
the two of them are so busy and both traveling in different directions half the time. So we're very excited that we have managed to get both of them in for one show.
Yes.
So stay tuned for the Uncle Buggy Show. Some of the best music you've never heard.
Yes.
My brother has like the best taste in music. He turned me on to the best music when I was a kid.
Cool.
Still does.
That's what brothers do.
So stay tuned. And what you want to do, if you're going to stay tuned, is you might have to reset your browser, because once we sign off, it goes back to the studio a couple blocks away.
It's true. It's true.
So everyone, have a great green week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and don't forget to visit the blog at thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. And remember to share the good green news with friends and family.